This is Star Wars in Character, the podcast that takes a closer look at some of the elements that make up the Star Wars universe. Backstories, histories, and details you never knew, wanted to know, or ever need to know. Now here are this week's panelists of Star Wars in Character.
Hey, this is Dave from Star Wars in Character, and today I have the pleasure of talking with Tim Veekhoven, all the way from Belgium. Welcome, Tim.
Oh, thanks, Dave.
Well, on our show, we discuss the backstories of obscure characters, so I thought who better to speak to that than the author of some of those backstories himself. So glad that you could join me and lend us your insight and expertise.
Well, thanks for having me aboard.
Sure. Now, one of the other things, and Tim and I were kind of talking about this before we started recording, I've always been interested in the perspective of Star Wars around the world. I have a lot of international friends, and really our audience is an international audience. We have listeners from Australia, Europe, Canada, Latin America. I mean, you name it, we have people chiming in from all over the place, and that fascinates me. So to be honest with you, and I also wanted to give you my condolences on Belgium being knocked out of the World Cup. I know that's important to you.
Yeah. Thank you. Well, we faced a good match versus the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry about that.
That's okay.
But, well, we didn't find any options against the defensive play of the Argentinians, so yeah.
But I assume you'll be tuning in tomorrow anyway.
Yeah, and surely Sunday when the final will be played.
All right. Well, and although soccer isn't a big deal in the U.S., it's becoming a bigger deal, as you can see by the way people kind of rallied around the U.S. team. And I happen to be a pretty good soccer fan and a Man City fan. So Vincent Kompany is my guy. So you guys have a great team, and that was a good game. But I wanted to offer my condolences.
Thanks. But the United States have always been underestimated.
There you go.
Because the people in Belgium, they said, oh, we will play against Germany or against Portugal in the second round.
Right.
And I always said, you guys are forgetting the United States, because in the last World Cups, they have never been beaten in the first round. They usually go through to the second round or even to the third round.
All right.
People always underestimate the team of the United States, and that's something you should never do.
That's good to hear. I like that. And I always find a way to bring it back to sports. You know, so that was my one little, you know.
We're kind of unique, because from my experience, there aren't that many Star Wars fans who are also sport fans.
That's true. Although we do have in American baseball here, they'll have Star Wars nights, and people will wear their uniforms and their costumes to the game and stuff like that. But you're right, the intermingling of sports and Star Wars doesn't happen a whole lot.
Yeah, well, because recently I, together with Sander de Lange from the Netherlands, I did the blog on the official website about Star Wars and sports.
Nice.
So that was a cool mixture
between
the two worlds.
Very good. Well, the only thing, I have to be honest with you, the only thing that Americans know about Belgium in general is Jean-Claude Van Damme and waffles.
Yeah,
so,
and chocolate.
Yeah, I'm counting on you to maybe enlighten some of us here in the U.S. Could you say that there is a point of view of Star Wars in Belgium? Like, what could you say is the Belgian take on Star Wars?
Well, for starters, the popularity in Belgium of Star Wars compared to the popularity in the United States, it's really something totally different. For instance, for the merchandising, we only get a small amount of the merchandising that's available in the United States. There are some Hasbro figures, now 6-inch and 3-inch and 3/4 figures. Some of them you can find here. Of course, the Lego. The new sets of Lego are faster available in Belgium than in the United States, I guess.
Yeah, I never thought about that, but you must be right.
Yeah, but the other things, those are very hard to find.
Right.
Books, I always order them through online bookshops, because might be perhaps like, say, 5 bookstores in Belgium that have Star Wars books.
Right.
So yeah, that's not not possible. And also other things, older merchandising, some other memorabilia that from Star Wars. Those are harder to get, though. There are some special stores. Some of them that our fan club works together with. But yeah, there are not, of course, not every town has one of these. It's just the largest towns in Belgium that have some of the more specialized stores.
Right.
And yeah, well, in the Star Wars perspective in general, the world of the larger world that we belong to, the world of fantasy and science fiction in Belgium is always regarded with caution, I'd say. When you get questions from the media or the press, you always have to be very careful what you say, because they like to link it to geekiness and nerdness. and though that's not always a bad thing,
okay, that's what I was gonna
ask Belgium,
you.
It is considered to be a bad thing. You know, the cool geekiness that exists in the United States, for instance, girls who dress up like characters, that's something that's only starting to emerge in Belgium.
Okay. Yeah, they call almost like a chic geek thing that's going on here. Something like the Big Bang Theory is a perfect example of that. Those guys are considered cool, and you're saying that has not reached Belgium yet.
Well, the Big Bang Theory is broadcasted in Belgium. But yeah, for instance, when a large television program is doing a show about a large convention, the reporter or the journalists always seems to be trying to do something interesting or trying to make fun of people.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's something we have always tried to do with the fan club. Try to be as normal as possible.
Right. Well, I was going to ask you about that, and you've mentioned it a couple of times. Can you tell us about TK421 and your involvement with it?
Well, I'm one of the co-founders of the TK421, the Belgian Star Wars fan club. The club was founded in 1997, and we became a non-profit organization in 1999.
Right.
We had two original goals. First one was to bring the fans in Belgium together. And yeah, that we did that by organizing some meetings. We have a quiz meeting, we have a game meeting, we have a fan day. But of course, the rise of the internet has made this goal a lot easier to achieve.
Right.
The second large goal was to inform our members and fans about Star Wars, and we do that through our presence online. Our website has been continuously online since 1998, and of course also through our TK421 magazine. It's still a magazine in print. It's written in Dutch. And in September, we will publish our 69th issue.
Excellent.
So I think it's one of the only magazines that is still being printed regularly.
Yeah, magazines and newspapers are becoming a thing of the past. So that's really cool.
Yeah, we decide we still want to have it because I still want our members to have something to touch.
Yeah.
And to read. Yeah, that they can physically hold.
That's important. Did you start it in 1997 to coincide with the re-releases of the original trilogy in theaters, or had that not reached Europe yet? Like, because they were re-released here beginning in 1997, or is it just a coincidence?
No, they did reach Belgium really fast.
Good.
Almost at the same time as they reached the United States.
Okay.
And TK started from the ashes of a local fan club. The Bounty Hunter Capture Log. It was a local fan club in the city of Ghent. And the founder of that fan club, we still work with him because he owns a specialty store in Ghent called Gadget. And the people that were involved in that local fan club, they didn't really... I think they lacked a bit of ambition or ideas to promote a fan club throughout Belgium or throughout Flanders, because we are in fact Flemish. Right. And so we asked about the future of the fan club, and they said, yeah, go, do what you want to do with it. And right. So we gave it another name, and we started from, yeah, we did the tabula rasa, and we started it all over again.
Great. Well, that's great. And anything that you're talking about now, I'm going to make sure I put links to on our Facebook page so people can learn more about it. I'm always fascinated by this, and speaking to my friends from around the world, how did you become interested in Star Wars? And I mean, as a child.
Well, I remember that my father had already seen the movie, because I don't know what the name is in English for the profession, but he looked after children who were, in a school. Okay. But who stayed over to sleep.
Okay.
And he went with those boys to the theater, and he saw the movie. And then when I was 5 in 1981, my parents took me to see Star Wars re-release and The Empire Strikes Back.
Okay, so you got them both right away.
Yeah. And then I got 4 Kenner figures. I played with them the entire afternoon, and then they decided to get me more. And that's how it all started. So basically, my interest mainly started from, of course, seeing the movies, but mainly from the vintage Kenner.
That is a story told over and over again. And it's to me, it's almost heartwarming to hear that that's the same way, because we talk about that a lot on the show. Those toys, and that's why we as a podcast raise money for Toys for Tots and donate a lot of toys to children. Those toys are so important to children, especially nowadays with video games. And I'm not trying to sound like an old man, but to have a toy in your hand, to have to come up with a story in your mind, to use your imagination, is important. It's important for a child's development. And look where it's led you.
Yeah, I think so. I agree with that. Because I usually played with either Star Wars or with Masters of the Universe. Mm-hmm. Those were the two toy series that I collected. So they were both action figure based.
Yeah. That's a story. Your story is very much like all of our stories as co-hosts on the podcast, and all of a lot of my friends and people around the world. It's great to hear that story again.
Because I think that people from my age, perhaps some of the older fans, were able to get interested into Star Wars because of other things. But I got interested into Star Wars as a movie and in the late 80s. So when I was about, like, say, 12 years, then I started to collect other things like comics and books and posters.
Right. That's great. I kind of want to go from that point of your life then, and we're getting towards the thing that people would know you for is your writing. What is your writing background, and how did it kind of land you the opportunity to write for Star Wars Insider and come up with some of these backstories that you've done?
Well, I guess that's my name, and also perhaps the names of my friends from the Netherlands, Sander and Kevin Beentjes.
Okay.
Some people might be surprised to see our names, because perhaps they don't know us. But it's a process that's been going on for quite some time. I have a degree in history, and then I started to write for the TK magazine. But I've been in touch with some people from Lucasfilm throughout the years because of the fan club. And the first thing I was able to do for the official website was through What's the Story?
Mm-hmm.
Contest with the hyperspace members. Then after some of my stories were chosen for What's the Story, I got that the blog on the official website, but it was just a member blog. You know, when you were a member of hyperspace online, you automatically got that blog. And that blog was visited sometimes by official people like Abel Pena. And Leland Chi visited that blog.
Right.
And then I helped the official site with an article about droids. And then for the official, when the website was rebuilt once again. And when the official blog was there, I went to Paris to visit the exposition of vintage toys, and I just asked them if they were interested in having a report about it. And they said they were. So that's how I started to write for the blog and now website. And the Star Wars Insider, well, I've always been bugging the people of Star Wars Insider that the Insider was the perfect place to give names to unnamed characters.
Right.
And that's why they started with the Rogues Gallery feature. When I met Jonathan Wilkins, the editor of Star Wars Insider, he said to me, "You're the reason why we have that feature in the magazine." and we also met Leland Chee and Pablo Hidalgo on Celebration. They were really, really nice people. Very nice guys.
Absolutely.
And then when we got back home, after some time, Leland asked our help with one of the Rogues galleries. And the next one, he asked to ask Jonathan if it was all right, if I could handle the Rogues gallery. Mm-hmm. And I got Sander and Kevin involved because six eyes can see more than just two eyes. So that's how we got to do it.
That's great. I was going to ask you, that was one of my questions, if what have your interactions been with Leland, because we did get the fantastic opportunity to have him on our panel at the celebration in Orlando. And I figure with his job title, you must have had some interactions with him.
I know Leland is a very busy person, and I only send him questions when I really need to.
Right.
Because before I met him in Germany, the only questions I sent him was, "Leland, can you please give a name to that guy?" That guy still hasn't got a name. So I sent him and Pablo, I don't know how many emails. So the first thing I said to him was, "Please excuse me for sending you all these mails throughout the years." And he just laughed and he said, "Don't worry about it." And Pablo said, "Don't worry. I mean, I like people who send those type of questions." So, yeah. Okay. Like I said before, they were really friendly, and I participated to all their panels.
Right.
And, because they were really, really interesting.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Well, that, I guess we can get sort of into some of your characters. Now, there's a lot, and there's lists online that I've gone to for some of these characters, and I have to admit, a lot of these characters, to me, we talk about obscure characters. These are very obscure, which is fantastic. Did you pick some of these characters intentionally? Like, what inspired you to get involved with the characters that you are involved with?
Well, the four characters, of course, of What's the Story? Mm-hmm. Those are characters that I couldn't choose. If you remember, or if the listeners can remember What's the Story, it was the official site that added the name or a character online. And the members of Hyperspace had 1 week to complete the background or complete whatever that was asked. So I just sent in my weekly background.
Okay.
And then ultimately the winners between brackets were chosen. So you didn't really have a choice on which character would be chosen, because I thought that the backgrounds that were chosen, I sometimes didn't expect them to be the ones that were going to be picked out. I sometimes expected that one of my backgrounds had more opportunities to be chosen with another character. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I didn't have any choice about those guys, but all the characters in the Rogues Gallery. Now the first one with the Royal Naboo Security Forces. That team was already chosen by Leland.
Okay.
But the other ones that we did, the three other ones, those, yeah, we had the choice of the theme. And, of course, Jonathan of the Insider and Leland and Pablo had to approve the theme. And then we just could do whatever that they approved of.
All right. Well, this insight is the kind of thing that I was really interested in, because, like, I think as outsiders, we wonder, like, well, how did this happen? We go over these backstories somehow, and I've always wondered. Some of them are from, like, the short story novels and all that kind of stuff, but I'm always curious where these things come from. And that's why I'm so excited to talk to you, because some of them are coming from you.
Yeah.
Let's go through some of the characters. Now, I put a bunch of the characters that you've had some involvement with on our Facebook page yesterday. Yesterday was Tim Wiekhoven Day on our Facebook page. So, and our listeners and followers are good. I mean, much better than I am. I was just putting up pictures, and almost instantly for all of them, they knew exactly who it was. I was impressed.
Yeah, I noticed that.
They're good. And I assume they weren't looking this up, because we put up a lot of trivia and stuff like that. And I would say, like, don't go online and look it up. Like, I really want to know who knows what. And some of the people were instantly, I put the picture up, they knew the name. I was impressed.
Yeah, they did pretty well.
So I'm going to go through some of these characters. And like, we usually do one character per episode. You're kind of going to get a six character deal here in one episode.
Okay.
I focused on original trilogy characters, mainly because I'm an old dude at this point, and that's what I like. What can you tell us about these characters? And I put this is one I put up first, Swilla Corey.
Yeah, well, I believe Swilla was was in the first round of the What's the Story characters. Mm-hmm. And when that story was chosen, how can I say this correctly? It kind of put my put me to a certain ease.
Okay.
It's like when a team gets the first victory in the Tour de France in one of the first stages.
Right.
So it can cycle with more confidence.
It gave you confidence that you could do this and be successful at it.
Yeah, and you didn't. Yeah, it was like, I know what I'm doing is okay.
Great.
It's respected, because it was. I got involved in the source information because of the West End Games books.
Okay.
Some of them were really practically devoured throughout the years. So when that background was chosen, it was also a bit of a confirmation that I hadn't been reading all these books for nothing.
That's good.
And that was kind of a confirmation. And yeah, it put me to a certain kind of ease.
Yeah, give you a sense of satisfaction.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's good.
So yeah, Swilla is a minor background character in the cantina. She's one of the female characters, and she can be seen when Obi-Wan has made short work of Ponda Baba and Dr. Avazon. And she was part of her story was already developed by Decipher's card game. Mm-hmm. It said that she was a thief, but I just imagined that not all thieves are necessarily evil.
Right.
Robin Hood was basically also a thief. So that's what I made. I made her kind of a victim of what happened to her in the past.
That's a good analogy of the Robin Hood one. I like that. And as soon as I put the picture up, she does look like a couple of other famous people. And not only are the people on our page also very good at this, they're also very funny. And people were putting up that that she looked like either Courtney Love or Heather Graham.
Yeah.
And I can see that.
I think there only have been two decent pictures of her available, so she's one of the characters from the London shoot, from the UK shoot, to survive in the final cut. So
right. And anytime we talk about this on the show from time to time, anytime there's a woman involved, it's almost like a novelty, because there were so few women, especially in the original trilogy, that when there is one, the Tanaka sisters and things like that, it's like people clamor onto it, because it's like, ooh, it's a girl.
Yeah, that's true, because I wanted to say she's one of the few female characters in the cantina, but actually that's not true, because there are a few alien characters who are female.
Yeah.
But, well, yeah, I guess not everybody's kind of interested in those.
No, not Dice.
But she's visually a female character, yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's great. Let's see who else we have. And there are some that I'm totally ignorant of. And if I'm saying this wrong, I'm sure you'll correct me. Sala Mahal.
Yeah, Solo Mahal.
Okay.
He was played by a female. And actually, Solo Mahal, he doesn't appear in A New Hope, but he appears in the holiday special in the cantina.
Right.
But when I wrote a story, the Lutrillians, so the species of Solo Mahal, the two Lutrillians that appear in A New Hope, weren't given a name. Leland named those in one of the previous rogue galleries. And since Tsist, the other character that I linked to Solo Mahal in the story, so Tsist and Solo Mahal can be seen together in an early shoot of the cantina that you can see on the Behind the Magic CD-ROM.
Okay.
And that's why I linked those characters together. But Solo Mahal, yeah, I mean, he can't be seen in the movie. You have to see to watch a holiday special. And he's a character that has quite an amazing amount of background because he also appears in one of the, I believe it's one of the Jedi Path series with young Anakin and Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a general for the Republic.
Yeah, I think Ray, one of our frequent posters and listeners and a man that does a lot of work on our behalf as far as like photoshopping and coming up with videos and stuff for us, Ray, he's very knowledgeable about this. And as soon as that picture went up on Facebook, he knew who it was, didn't want to spoil it, wanted to let other people guess. But he had said that too, that of all these characters, he has the longest backstory of these characters.
Yeah. Yeah, there was... he also got some... His first background in this Decipher CT, the card game.
Mm-hmm.
And then he appears in one of the crossover books from the Young Jedi Apprentice. But it's one of those stories that feature several generations of Jedi.
Okay.
Like Obi-Wan when he was an apprentice, then Anakin when he was an apprentice. And then Solo Mahal appears as a general in the Clone Wars for the Republic.
Good. And I'm going to have to go back and look for him in the holiday special. We did a whole episode on the holiday special, and it's like that one of those love-hate kind of relationships with the holiday special. But I would watch that scene over and over again. So that gives me another excuse to go back and watch that.
Yeah, well, Kevin and I also wrote a blog about the cantina for the holiday special.
All right.
And Leland allowed us to name all the unnamed characters from that scene. So
that's fantastic. We're big fans of Star Wars in character of the holiday special and Akmina and that whole scene. Well, great. Let's see what else we got here. We got this character I know I've seen, didn't know the backstory, but our listeners and posters did. Poat Snitkin.
Yeah, Poat. I connected him to one of the other characters, the Yuuzhan named Wam Luvba.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always been kind of interested in Poat Snitkin because he can easily be seen in the movie, but you have to know when he can be seen.
Right.
I mean, piloting the second skiff during the Battle of Carcoon.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was it's the only Skrilling that appears in the classic movies. There might be another one in Jabba's Palace during the dance scene, which has never been officially confirmed as being Poat or perhaps another Skrilling. Okay. But I thought he was a cool guy and he was a weapon smuggler also. So, yeah. That's why I wanted to connect. And he did have a background. He got it in one of the West End Games books, but it wasn't a very extensive background. So I figured out he could get some more information.
I know at some point we had done... We Jabba's Palace is a big source of characters for us, as is the cantina. And at some point, we're going to do Hermy Odal.
Yeah.
And I know that their backgrounds kind of intertwine. So, and I don't want to spoil too much of that because of the way Poat Snitkin's life kind of ends. I was interested to read the backstory and kind of how that ended up happening. So I'm sure that'll come up on another episode of Star Wars in Character.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Let's see who else we got here. And you mentioned Wam Lufba. Would you consider him maybe one of your more famous characters?
Well, he's very hard to notice in the movie, but his the stills that were taken from the Lufba puppet on set, they have been more widely used. I mean, he has appeared in the Star Wars character encyclopedia.
Okay.
So he has Wam has really, and he has his own trading card. So he has appeared in quite some books and magazines, yeah.
Yeah, and I know he came up, and I remember you were kind enough to give us some extra information. We did an episode on Joe Yauza, and people like me have always been confused, thought maybe Joe Yauza was the only Yazam, and we did the whole backstory of where they came from and all that kind of stuff. But I remember you chimed in way back when we did that episode. No, this is Wam Lufba, and I know we appreciated that, but I think that a lot of people get those guys confused.
Yeah, well, Wam can nearly always be seen with his sporting rifle.
Mm-hmm.
So and yeah. He's basically a reminder of what the first plans could have been with the Yuuzhan, because there were plans to feature the Yuuzhan in Return of the Jedi, people with stilts.
Mm-hmm.
But when that wasn't going to happen, they kind of put a Yuuzhan in Jabba's palace.
Well, it's good they did, because
they didn't want to throw away the creature, so they put him in Jabba's palace, but he's very hard to see.
Yeah, but that's why we like these obscure characters. It's the true fans that sit and pore over the movies and who's that guy, and oh, there's a guy in the shadow. Like that's what makes this fun.
Yeah, I know. I totally agree.
And what else we got here? Ketwal. This has come up on an episode of ours too, and this was one of the digital. Now, was it digital or was not?
No, it wasn't digital.
Okay. That's one of the things we argued about on the show, that some of us thought that this character, this double-faced character, was digital, but I remember people saying that it wasn't, and I don't remember if we came to a consensus on it. So, Ketwal.
No, Ketwal was definitely not digitally added, and I decided to use him because I linked him to Suwila Corey. Mm-hmm. Ketwal is, in fact, a character that helps Suwila Corey to improve her life and her lifestyle. And I first wanted to use Momau Nadon, the Ithorian, because he's generally described as a gentle character. But then I remember a scene in the wildlife of Star Wars where the Pakitip, you know, Ketwal species, they are used to tending the Jerba creature. And since Suwila was a former Jerba herder, it made sense that Ketwal would be the one helping Suwila to get her herd back.
Okay.
So that's why I connected Ketwal to Suwila's Corey.
So the continuity is important too, and that's probably something that makes like Leland's job easier. The fact that your writing has tied up some loose ends and made this all kind of like symbiotic is probably a big deal.
Yeah, well, I think something like a retcon, it's not an easy challenge.
Right.
You don't have to retcon things to retcon things. And the same goes for making a connection or making a link. You don't have to link anything, but when there is an opportunity, try and do so.
Yeah.
You don't have to create too many new things when it's not really necessary.
Yeah. I appreciate that. That makes perfect sense. Some of the backstories we've read, the ones that we end up not liking as much are the ones that just go nuts and put in things that aren't necessary at times. The ones that are better are the ones that are well thought out, maybe even a little simpler. And we appreciate those kind of things, I think, more than some of them, the person took maybe too many liberties, and in doing that, maybe instead of tying up loose ends, created more.
Yeah, because I've always been a fan in history of what they call the history of the small man.
Mm.
You know, in years before, people were only interested in the lives of the kings and the famous people. But in the last century, and I believe also that it began in the 19th century, people were starting to show interest for the lives of the common man,
right?
The people that worked on the fields, the laborers. And that's kind of an interest that I always have felt for the characters in Star Wars. I mean, of course I love the heroes and the villains, but it's also the common people that are part of the Star Wars universe, and they have a story to tell as well.
Absolutely.
It's just that those stories can't just be as popular or as exciting as the stories of the heroes.
Yeah.
So that's why I always chose to give those characters rather, well, normal backgrounds for the Star Wars universe.
And I know I appreciate that and admire that ability to do that. So that totally kind of fits in with our way of thinking with some of these. The last character I'm going to bring up, I cannot pronounce, but I found him fascinating, and it's Tisvit?
Yeah, the Tisvit. Or I don't know how to pronounce this either. I think his name has never been officially pronounced somewhere.
Okay, we need Leland's thing on this. But this one, I'd say of all the characters that I put up on Facebook, was the one that people could not get. They had seen him before here and there, like a still shot, you know, maybe here and there. But people were like, they knew his name was maybe some combination of consonants, but could not nail it down. It came up with a lot of funny answers, but this is the one that stumped everybody. This and Solomon Hall, and their stories actually intertwine a little bit. So what can you tell us about him?
Well, he's got a tough name, but I didn't create a name. The name was already created by the Cypher. And he was featured better in the UK shoot, but George Lucas wasn't really happy about that shoot, so he changed a lot by adding some pickup shots. And he rarely survived the final cut. He can be seen when the sand troopers question Wooher, the bartender, about the earlier accident with Ponda Baba losing his arm. And then you can just see his head popping up between the sand troopers.
All right.
So that's basically where you can see him in the movie. But of course, he's also better known from the stills, the ones that appeared in the Star Wars Chronicles.
Yeah.
And I think that's where people know him from. And I really hope that Hasbro will create a figure of him sooner or later, because he's a cantina alien.
Yeah.
And he really looks rather weird. So
yeah, I'm looking at that still shot now. It's a black and white still shot.
Yeah.
Some of that uncut footage that you can find online or on the Blu-rays of the cantina are fascinating to big fans. And this may have been a case where they took an existing mask, one of a fly, maybe even from the classic movie, The Fly, the Vincent Price film, and stuck it on a guy and said, stand in the background, you know, like it, cause it's basically a fly.
Yeah. Because the masks in the UK were mainly created by the great Stuart Freeborn,
right?
But Stuart Freeborn had been ill for quite some time during the production, because he also had to return from Tunisia. So perhaps he didn't have all the time he wanted. And perhaps the budget was also rather limited for the creation of the mask from the cantina. And that's why some of the masks from the UK shoot are a bit weird.
But it's great. And that's one, as soon as I was looking through some of the characters, like this one to me, I find instantly interesting because of the look at it and then reading the backstory. Excellent job. And all of these will be put on our Facebook page as well. People want to go into some greater detail with some of these backstories. Are there any characters I haven't mentioned that you would like to mention?
Just a few of the characters that we did in the Rogues galleries.
Okay.
I mean, there was a lot of... there had been some fuzz about the fact. So we did the scene where Leia briefs the pilots right before the Battle of Hoth. And the character that had always been established as Cassin Omis by the Cypher actually turned out to be Deck Ralter.
Oh, okay.
And when we did the research, it was Pablo Hidalgo who found out that casings should have been changed to Dagralter. He had spoken to John Morton's daughter, so John who played Dagralter, and she said, yeah, that's my father. So the character of Cassin, he was really omitted from appearing in the movie. So yeah, that caused quite some editing issues on Wikipedia.
Right, I would think so.
And then with the ones we did with the Nemoidians, we were able to name a Nemoidian after a friend of ours. She's Lizzie Carter is one of the, and probably the biggest fan of the Nemoidians. And so we gave one of the Nemoidians the name of Zil Carte after her.
Well, that's great. She must have been touched.
Oh, I think she was really, really happy about that. And then just the last Rogues Gallery we did, that was really funny because we did the Cloud City Wingards.
Oh, all right.
And we were able to name a lot of action figures in that one.
That's great.
So that's always cool when you can say that you have given a name to an action figure.
Absolutely. And I saw that you were just in Star Wars Insider again, weren't you?
Yeah, I did. I went to Paris with some friends of TK a few months ago. And yeah, I wrote a report about the exposition in Paris.
Excellent. Well, I'm going to ask you a question that we ask every single guest on our show, anyone we interview, since we do the obscure characters or try to do our best to bring some of these people to light. Who is your favorite obscure character? Now, you can do two if you want. You can do one of yours that you've done and somebody different. It's up to you. But is there one obscure character that to you has always stood out from the rest?
Well, there are two characters that I really like, and those are Treva Horme and Weor Cattle.
Okay.
So the Latrillian and the Snivian on Cloud City. They've been, well, you can see Treva Horme walk through the screen when the people from Cloud City are evacuating the city.
Oh, okay.
But they are mostly known from the stills that are taken on set and not from the movie themselves. And Pablo, he was the first one to expand their biographies in the second edition of The Empire Strikes Back Galaxy Guide from West End Games. And those characters, they're always photographed, photographed together.
Okay.
And yeah, because of that, the Snivian is in fact the only species together with yeah, of course, human and also Wookiee, who appears in the original, in all the movies from the original trilogy.
Okay, that is a good piece of trivia. And those are insanely obscure characters.
Yeah, because The Empire Strikes Back is obviously the movie that features the least alien characters.
Yeah.
And then you had two alien characters on Cloud City, and they got deleted, so...
Yeah. All right, well, is there anything else that you'd like to plug... people want to follow you on Twitter, anything like that. Is there anything else that you'd like to get out there? Anything you have coming up?
Well, the best is my profile on the official Star Wars website. It features a link to the website of TK and to my Facebook and Twitter page. So that would be the most easy way to get in touch with me.
That sounds good. And we'll put those up on our Facebook page as well.
Yeah,
I mean, and you and I were kind of talking about this too. I'd like to do a sort of a mini series here, almost a Star Wars around the world kind of thing, and get the viewpoint of people from all around the world. And I'd like to thank you for sort of being the guinea pig in this experiment. I'd like to thank you for joining me and not only giving us the Belgian perspective on Star Wars, but for giving us an inside glimpse at some of the great obscure characters.
It was a pleasure to be here.
All right. Thanks a lot, Tim.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Star Wars in Character. Star Wars in Character is part of the NeoZaz.com network of podcasts. For more great podcasts and original entertainment, please visit www.neozaz.com. Star Wars in Character is not affiliated with nor endorsed by Lucasfilm Limited or 20th Century Fox. Star Wars and all Star Wars universe characters, places, or Star Wars related items are the copyright of Lucasfilm Limited or their respective trademark and copyright holders. Visit www.swic.neozaz.com for the latest Star Wars in Character episodes and information.